listener production.
Hi, this is Paul McIntyre. Welcome to the MI3 Audio Edition. I've been a business journalist for 25 years covering the marketing, media, agency and tech sectors. In this series, we talk to industry leaders about the global and local developments that you need to be across this week. This audio edition is created in conjunction with partners as part of our Market Voice series. Well, we know the commercial potential for brand owners from their owned media assets, that is anything they control from websites to storefronts, email and loyalty programs, is forecast to hit $5 billion by year's end in Australia, according to an annual benchmarking report from valuation firm Sonder. Retailer media is, of course, the rowdiest segment in the owned media sector at present, but it represents just one third of the total commercial value for brand-owned media assets. Historically, owned media assets have been used to build customer retention, while paid media, that is advertising, has been about acquiring new customers. But in the past 3 years, there's been a lot of sophistication underway from brands in their owned media portfolio management, led in large part by audit and valuation programs from the likes of Sonder, which really, for the first time, has given brands some missing context and rigor around the financial and commercial potential of the media assets they own. ANZ Bank's former CMO and now Managing Director of Everyday Banking, Sweta Mehra, for example, was on this podcast last year explaining how the bank's first audit and valuation of its owned media had identified how it was under-leveraging 85 million impacts a month, mostly with ANZ customers. And as a result, the marketing team now think first about their own channels before developing paid media briefs. So on the mics today is one of the earliest marketers in the country to scale owned media assets, going back 20 years at American Express, well ahead of the trend curve. Since Amex, Julie Nestor has been at Hilton Hotels and eBay, but is now EVP, Head of Marketing and Communications for MasterCard APAC, where perhaps a standout owned media initiative derived from a global ad campaign of all things has been a roaring success. If you're not aware of MasterCard's priceless tagline, launched in 1997, you probably shouldn't be in marketing. Today, it's become a core owned media platform for MasterCard that derives huge retention for the card issuer, but with a twist. It works primarily as a B2B engine room for MasterCard and the customers of its biggest partners, that is, the banks. The Priceless is just one of Julie's owned media platforms and just one of her owned media programs. And today, she's joined by Sonder's founding partners, Jonathan Hopkins and Angus Fraser, for some insights and learnings around owned media and why MasterCard continues to invest heavily in the area. So welcome, Julie, Jonathan and Angus. I think it's going to be an interesting one. We've got a veteran owned media marketer. There's not many of them around, Julie, so welcome. We'll get to what you're doing at MasterCard and your owned media strategy pretty shortly. But as one of the early marketers that saw it as, I guess, owned media as an untapped opportunity, going back, as I said, more than 20 years at Amex, very keen just to get a sense of how owned media got on your radar and why it's so important in your remit today. And welcome. Thanks for joining.
Good morning. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me. I don't love being called a veteran, but I'll go with it.
Yes, it's a compliment.
Actually, before Amex, I actually was... started my career in ad agencies. Actually, that's where I first met Gus at George Pats. And then I was working for some time at Optus. And you'll recall back in the early days, Optus had a very scaled mobile business, but was still looking to extend its offerings across pay TV, fixed line telephony, which is really showing my age, and yes, internet services. And of course, the best way to do that was to cross-sell to the existing mobile customer. And so the most valuable owned media at the time was the one thing we knew that a customer really looked at every month, which was their statement. And so, you know, back then, sort of pre-digital explosion, it was really about DM and statement inserts became the channel of choice to do that. That was sort of where it first came on my radar, I guess.
Quite analog back then, wasn't it, really?
Very analog. But the strategy still remains, like, be where your customers are and where you're going to get the most attention. And so that's kind of where it started there, you know, back in the day at Optus.
And then you landed at Amex, and what happened there? So obviously it was in motion already, but what did you see when you got there?
Yeah, I mean, at Amex, the use case was a little different. It was less about cross-sell. You know, I think all your listeners will know that Amex traditionally charge a premium to merchants for the cost of card acceptance. And merchants therefore always, you know, want value back from Amex to justify that higher cost of acceptance. So the strategy there was very much about proving the value to the merchants of being able to reach these really high spending and valuable consumers via Amex's owned channels and platforms. So we could work with merchants to curate very bespoke offers for these consumers, and then we'd be able to target based on their spend data, based on where they lived. And so the merchants would have a very, very sort of personalized way of reaching large audiences. And that would then help in turn the premium that we were charging to the merchant to be justified, because they were spending a lot less, you know, than they would have to if they were using their own paid media with less personalization and targeting. When I was there, for example, we were really, you know, focusing on sort of increasing the reach of Amex acceptance through small business. So this was, you know, we did some very bespoke programs for small business where we would actually curate, you know, social media posts for their business and be able to target the audiences they were looking for.
Angus, you've got some thoughts there.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we hold Julie up as one of the early pioneers in the space when it comes to actually understanding the commercial value of it, because what she did early on was engage Sonda to come in and actually run a valuation across all of the media assets that they utilized on behalf of these merchants. And that gave them the ability to then actually quantify it in dollar terms. So it wasn't just that you could say, hey, we'll give you an email and we'll give you some website space and, you know, a tile on our app. You could actually explain the value of it, the dollar value of it. And that, I think, can really shift the lens for businesses, because they then, you know, your partners, your merchants and that kind of thing, really fully understand it. They can put a dollar value to it.
Julie, just on in terms of how things have developed and got more sophisticated as this whole area has developed, what did you see at the start and what you were doing with own media, say, at Amex? And by the time you finished there, what had developed? And then we'll get on to what you're doing at MasterCard very shortly. But what had changed in that? What was it, 10 years you were there?
I was there 13 years. Yeah, there was quite a lot. I mean, I think back in the earlier days, you know, when digital assets and e-commerce were still sort of forming, it was very much, you know, traditional banner ads and static statement messages. It wasn't particularly engaging or particularly targeted, to be honest. Over the time at Amex, you know, the company built what's known as Amex Offers, which is an ecosystem of curated and targeted offers that were merchant funded, but again, presented to the consumer in the place that they are most focused on, which is through their digital statement via the app, right? So for example, I'm looking at my monthly transactions, making sure I'm not getting ripped off, and there'll be a personalized offer for me that's super relevant based on where I'm spending and located today. And all you had to do as the consumer was simply one click, which was save offer. And then you never had to think about it again through the back end. The merchants, you know, you're pre-registered with that merchant. And so as soon as you make that purchase, you know, you automatically receive a statement credit and a push notification that you've just saved X dollars at that merchant. So, you know, the beauty of it being that you don't need to remember a discount code. You don't have to do anything other than click once. And, you know, with the data and personalization side of it, you know, it's super relevant. So it's a win-win because the consumer stays sticky to Amex in this example. They know they're getting value, and then the merchant's getting very measurable incremental sales from Amex. So the biggest change was the technology and just how seamless the user experience became, which I still think is missing quite a lot, you know, from most companies. And as you think about your own journeys, like that is still one of the simplest kind of experiences that I've seen.
The primary reason for all this activity, as I sort of mentioned at the top, Julie, has historically been customer retention for own media. Is that still the primary driver of what you're doing now and what the main focus for you is?
Look, I think at MasterCard, it's a little bit different. You know, there's a lot of reasons to do it, but I think one critical point is just consumer distraction and paid advertising having to work so incredibly hard now to get consumer attention. You know, there's, I think, over 700 million ad blockers in the world that people have now. You know, consumer messaging is, you know, I believe we get 5,000 consumer messages per day and remember to the next day. So I think, you know, at MasterCard, for example, we focus less on kind of, you know, traditional advertising, I guess. And when I say traditional, I mean just paid advertising, and we focus a lot more on owned assets. And for us, that's in the form of priceless.com and creating experiences that are truly memorable to consumers to engage them. So I think there's a whole lot of reasons, right? One is, you know, budget, which is a real challenge for CMOs everywhere at the moment. You know, how do you make the most of the assets that you have? You know, reach, the data that you have available through your own channels. And obviously wanting consumers to be sticky and engaged with your brand, and engaging them on your own platforms really does help for that, because they'll come back and they'll, you know, look for those offers and those experiences that you can provide.
Jonathan, I might just get your take on what you're seeing across the market with owned media and what companies and brands are doing here in terms of use cases and the upside, the benefits for why they're doing it.
Yeah, I might just talk macro first before we go micro and just talk about the financial sector in totality. So our recent reports placed it as the highest growth sector in the whole owned media market at 19% year on year. So it's now worth about 181 million in Australia. Where's that growth come from? Well, largely through new entrants, but also focus on owned media leverage by the likes of CBA and their launch of their Brighter magazine feels like the tip of the iceberg for the sector. Why is it the highest growth category? Probably because these financial institutions have vast media networks across physical and digital channels, and their customer pool is huge, with frequent visitation to those channels, as Julie mentioned, and their first-party data is unparalleled. FinServices are in quite a unique position versus retailers, for example, because they have customer spend data across every category. So they can leverage their media with multiple brands and multiple categories. So it's only a matter of time before these brands start requesting access to such a desirable audience. In terms of the use cases, Julie's mentioned a few of them, but you know, one of the first ones is reducing the amount of paid investment. And that's through this kind of owned first, optimizing your own channels first, and then topping up in paid media, especially those businesses that have a physical and a digital presence that is so strong and vast across the nation, then it makes sense to leverage that first and then top up with paid media. And as you said, ANZ have been a bit of a benchmark in this thinking, having recently restructured their entire team around leveraging own data and channels as a priority. So that's the first use case, is smarter, more strategic marketing through paid, owned and earned, which can reduce your paid media investment. The second one is a long-term one, which is around long-term partnerships with the likes of Australian Open. You know, MasterCard has a partnership with Australian Open. They'll have a 5-10 year deal, whatever it is. And by representing the value of own channels in deals like that, you can reduce the overall investment in those long-term partnerships. So that's the second one. The third one is, as Julie described, attracting more reward partners through leading with the value and targeting capability of your media support to offers and rewards partners. And then the final one is the most common one, which is selling media for direct revenue, which we've seen a lot in the retail and grocery and liquor sectors, but not so much in finance. So it's only last year that CBA sold advertising in their Brighter magazine. And we saw this year the launch of a retail media network within the global finance app, Revolut, which has a young, desirable audience and has set up a retail media network paid for on its app through the shop pages. So that's the first sign we've seen. We've seen bits and bobs around the world prior to this, but I think this year is a bit of a tipping point for the financial sector.
Other sectors, Jonathan, very quickly, what are you seeing in terms of movement towards their own media strategies in those other sectors? It's in your report, I know, and you've touched a little bit, but is there anything of note?
Well, the retail aggregator sector is probably the second fastest growing, and that's a reflection of the multi-brand retailers like department stores, home electronics, sport, leisure, beauty, and pharmacy. And it continues to grow as new entrants look to unlock existing retail media assets and new retailers are entering the market as a media business.
Julie, can I just ask, In your marketing team at MasterCard, on a regional basis, how much of your focus and your team's capabilities and I guess budgets as well is on owned media versus paid media? And has that changed much, or is it changing much?
Yeah, look, I would say it has changed quite a lot, even probably in the, you know, in the last couple of years. Why has it changed? I think, you know, firstly, it goes back to, it always needs to go back to the core strategy of the brand. And for us, that's really about Priceless, which is, you know, our key kind of differentiator. We can talk more about that as we go on. But Priceless is a living, breathing platform that, you know, hosts hundreds of experiences globally. And that's really about trying to, you know, engage both our B2B and our B2C kind of customers. So if you think about MasterCard, how are we different from a bank? Well, we're actually, you know, the partner of the bank. So through where the scheme that provides the banks, you know, experiences, offers, and obviously the rails for them to run their transactions across credit and debit portfolios. But Priceless is about kind of providing experiences that the banks want to give their cardholders. In that sense, it's B2B. And then on the other side, we want to make sure that consumers still have a preference and an understanding of MasterCard being a differentiated network. So it's important that we reach both audiences. And to do that, we need to make sure that we have, you know, scaled and quality experiences and offerings for both those audiences. So that really means that's a big focus of what we do and where we put most of our investment and most of our energies across the region.
It's an interesting jump, isn't it, from an ad campaign launched however many years ago, 25 years ago, to a platform that's an owned media platform that's about creating retention and experiences. When did that actually happen? When did Priceless become something that beyond an ad campaign? I mean, it was before your time, I realize, but you know, when did that migrate?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, that the actual ad campaign started 27 years ago. You're right, over 25 years ago. And it was such a classic campaign, but it was really, you know, leaning into the insight that people were wanting to spend more money and more time on experiences with people that they loved and less about sort of buying things. Now that experiential economy has just continued, you know, over that period of time, and in fact has certainly increased now a lot more post-COVID, where people are really wanting experiences, once in a lifetime experiences, and wanting that to be with the people that they care about.
So you've seen that jump, have you? Post-COVID, it's even risen further, have you? The demand.
We see it in our spend data, and we see it in our research. And we actually do research every couple of years on consumer passions and what consumers are looking for. And then we kind of go and, you know, get those assets, curate and buy those assets, whether they be sponsorships or access to certain ambassadors or whatever, and then offer them through to the banks and through cardholders directly. But what we've definitely seen coming out of COVID, you know, during COVID, there was this purchase on stuff, right? Like you wanted to have, you know, exercise equipment and food and everything for when you're staying at home. But coming out of COVID, people are really like wanting to engage and have these great experiences. So, you know, Priceless is all about, you know, believing that the way to create memorable moments is through experience, not things. And so Jonathan mentioned Australian Open before. That's just one example where we know tennis is a key passion for many of our cardholders in Australia. So we create, you know, experiences around that, not just doing a standard, you know, naming rights sponsorship, but really truly integrating into those assets and then providing Priceless experiences around them.
Julie, how big is this Priceless platform in terms of an owned media asset? Can you quantify it all? How many experiences, how many people, just to give us a sense of the scale? This is quite significant, as you say, for the business, right?
Yeah, I mean, the platform itself is, you know, we offer it globally. We have thousands of experiences across different locations. And I won't go through all of the traffic and conversion numbers, but it is our
most... I'd love to hear those.
It's our most efficient channel for sure. Now, the key benefit or the key use case for Priceless is really about integration into the bank's digital platforms and apps, right? Because people don't wake up in the morning necessarily and think about, oh, I've got to go, you know, I'm going to remember priceless.com today and go look for experiences. It always needs to be placed in a way that's seamless for the consumer. And so the integration with banking partners becomes critical. And not just banking partners, in the case of American Airlines, for example, you know, all priceless experiences are integrated through American Airlines app, and people, those travelers will use their air mile points to redeem for experiences. So that's where it becomes so valuable to us, because the platform is monetizable and it creates additional value to our bank customers, which are, you know, which becomes extremely important for our business overall.
So in terms of that's priceless, and any idea in the region how many people are taking a priceless experience in a day or a week, that would be great. But the next sort of area that's of interest is it's just not priceless, right? You're working on a whole bunch of other things in your own media strategies. So since you've joined MasterCard, what's been your focus? Clearly priceless is a primary one, but what else?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think our focus is always thinking about how marketing supports a business to grow revenue. And that's usually done through us building, you know, these compelling assets that I've mentioned. So one of the, for example, is, you know, it's not always traditional priceless experiences, but we think about what consumers are interested in. We know gaming is just an absolute juggernaut at the moment. So in the last 18 months, you know, we've built another sort of tech innovation, which is called MasterCard Gamer Exchange. It's a technology that allows consumers to leverage their unused loyalty program points to exchange for, you know, gaming titles and in-game currency. And we've integrated this with a number of kind of key partners in Southeast Asia, you know, telcos and fintechs, giving them assets in gaming that will be interesting for their consumers and not something that they have to go out and build themselves. So that's one example. The other thing I want to talk about is, and I will get to how this works for owned media, but just give me a minute, because I want to talk also just about priceless really being about, you know, inclusion, because we also believe, you know, in doing right and doing good, and a world where everyone is included is truly priceless. So we're constantly looking at how we integrate inclusion with innovation. So I just want to give an example here. You know, going back to Australian Open, you know, we used a network to collaborate with partners to build a piece of technology that would allow kids in wheelchairs to be able to participate in training to become a ball kid. So, you know, why can't kids in wheelchairs be ball kids? And part of that issue is just simply, you know, how do you scoop up the ball in the same amount of time that someone who's not in a wheelchair can do that? So we created, you know, something like, it's almost like a little dustbuster thing that allows that to be used so that kids in wheelchairs can operate in a ball kid environment as fast as other kids can. So that's just one example about like innovation with inclusion. We've also launched in partnership with Westpac our Touch Card, which is a credit, debit, and prepaid card, which is designed with unique notches for people who are blind or low vision to be able to feel the card in their wallet. This is something really important. You know, when they're in a store, they don't want to ask somebody else to go through their wallet. So that Touch Card launched. And when we launched it with Westpac, we wanted to make sure we educated people on what it was about. And so we also just recently launched the first feature-length film called Touch. And it's an entirely audio-led film experience built for the blind and low vision community by the blind and low vision community. And we launched this at Sydney's Open Air Cinema just last month. So I think that, you know, you asked what else we're kind of doing. That's a big, big part of the strategy. But I do have one more example, but I can take a breath if you would like, on what we're doing around inclusion and owned media.
So, Julie, there's quite a diverse range of activity that you're doing in owned media, very broad. How are you measuring success? What are the KPIs that you're looking at to say our own media strategy is working? And what are some of those numbers? I want all the detail, please, Julie. that was a joke, by the way.
I know. Look, I think, you know, a lot of the, you know, measurement metrics are not dissimilar to things that we look at in paid media, for example. You know, if I think about priceless.com, we're looking at, you know, traffic, we're looking at impressions, we're looking at time on site, time on experience, conversion of experiences, frequency of visitation, all of these kind of things that we would, you know, look at, I guess, for any e-commerce kind of business. So that's one metric. There's also a metric that we measure, which is basically marketing efficiency. So it's how many dollars are we saving, you know, every quarter and every year through a rebalance of not just owned media, but also earned media. So we track that, and we have a target every year, and we have a year-on-year improvement target to drive greater efficiency. So that's a big part of it. And then there's some, you know, some additional ones that are more specific to MasterCard, for example, around, you know, Priceless being used in RFPs, like winning certain deals with banks and having monetization of the Priceless asset. So we also monetize Priceless.com. So we have a target against that. So, you know, they're hard metrics and they're metrics that get reported, you know, up through the leadership teams on a monthly basis.
We were talking earlier about sort of audit and valuations. You've done a few of these at MasterCard. So what areas, how did the audit and valuation of some of your assets help? I know we talked about it kind of good for the Australian Open and partnerships and so forth, but what has it done for the business in understanding what you can do and what you could, what sort of benefits and leverage you can derive or some upside you can derive for the business? What did you do there, Julie?
Yeah. So, you know, we partnered with Sonder again. You know, I had great experience with them back in Amex days. So it's great to be able to work with them again here. I think one thing that always surprises me with these valuations is you kind of think you know all your owned assets and you think you know the value of those owned assets. So I was sort of expecting, okay, Priceless.com, you know, this is the value of it. But you forget, like, you know, your social channels play a big role and maybe completely, you know, undervalued and overlooked, because a lot of the time you're thinking about your own social channels as just a way to build your own brand. You're not thinking about it necessarily as how it's kind of, you know, could add more value to partnerships and, you know, to banks and things like that, our partners. So I think that was a big takeout for me, just identifying channels that I hadn't really thought about in terms of a monetization point of view. But ultimately, the reason we used it here at MasterCard was for a couple of different reasons. The main being, you know, again, we want to always have the best content, experiences and offers to take to our banks. And to do that, we need merchants to provide something more compelling than like a standard 10% discount. So if they can see, you know, how much reach and how much value that they can get through our platforms, then they're more inclined to go the extra mile and really create, you know, something that's targeted, interesting, bespoke, et cetera. So that's a big use case for how we're using it here. Also, I think, you know, if you are in a company that is not necessarily, you know, a marketing-led company, you know, but maybe more of a sales organization or sales culture, you know, there's a lot of education, you know, that CMOs always need to do within their organizations about the value of marketing. And, you know, the difference between paid, owned and earned. And so I think having, you know, as Angus talked about before, real dollar figures and real, some, you know, measurable numbers that you can educate, you know, sales teams on to say, when you're going out and you're talking to a bank about integrating with Priceless.com, here's why they should do it. Or here's why, you know, our Priceless specials, you know, are really important to offer to banks, because, you know, it's attracting millions of views per, you know, conversions per month, etc. So I think that those two things were probably the big reasons why we did it here.
And just on that, the performance of, you talked about marketing efficiencies before, the performance of your own channels in terms of driving that engagement, whatever those KPIs that you're sort of looking at, the owned media delivery on that versus paid media, have you compared? Is it quite significant? Clearly you're still in it and doing it, so it's a better result, is my point.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think once you've built it, right, there's always investment in the beginning to, you know, build the platform itself or to build the, you know, put the money into the optimization experiences. But once that platform's, you know, developed and you get reach, which is important, and that goes back to my point about the necessity of having great content in order to get reach, it's far more efficient than paid media.
Well, the order of what? Can I put you on the spot and say, is it a range of 10 to 20% typically? Is it 5 to 15? Is it 50 to 70?
I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but just thinking about, you know, our media budgets and how they've changed over time, I'd say the magnitude of, you know, 30, 40%.
Okay. And Angus, that's typical for what you're seeing across the market, or is MasterCard sort of an outlier on that? What are you seeing in terms of those marketing efficiencies, both in terms of budget and delivery performance as well?
Oh, look, I think every business is different when it comes to performance. I think comparing across different organizations is kind of pointless in a sense when it comes to owned media. So I wouldn't want to compare MasterCard to any other business in that sense. But I think the way in which we go about auditing and valuing media, it certainly includes those performance metrics. So the audit that we did for MasterCard was across 10 different markets in the APAC region, including China and Hong Kong, India. And basically, all of the performance metrics that Julie was mentioning earlier in terms of click-throughs, time on site, sell-through, we have benchmarks around that. So we can assert higher value to the owned media formats based on that performance data. And we do that by basically bringing everything back to our $10 billion rate pool that we have. And that gives us our source of truth so that we can make these comparisons for different organizations and the media that they have. So all of this performance metrics can be factored into an audit and factored into the value of the media.
Now, you did say something there that I haven't heard before, or maybe I haven't, it hasn't landed before, Angus, but a $10 billion rate pool. Explain that one. Is that your, I won't try to.
No, that's fine. It's actually probably quite a bit more than $10 billion now, but essentially every business that we have conducted an audit and valuation for over the 8+ years of us doing this kind of work has been built into our benchmarking capability. So all of that data is there, and we are able to use that to basically ensure that our rates and our media are always accurate and are using the most amount of history and data depth that we can.
Julie, can I ask then, in terms of what you're doing now, we talked about sort of budget efficiencies and allocation and the areas of focus for you. Mm. How much of that was essentially guided by what came out of the audit and valuation to see where your potential was or what the upside was, and how much it is knowing what your market wants in terms of your customers?
I would say, maybe because this was the second time round for me of doing, media valuation like this, albeit two different companies with Sonder, there was nothing that was probably going to be so surprising that it kind of changed the strategy. It was more around, hey, here's this awesome tool that's going to help us put measurable numbers against what we already know. So it wasn't like we did the valuation, we're like, oh my gosh, we need to change all of our strategy, because our strategy was very much focused on owned it anyway. It was more about like having the kind of data points necessary to share with other partners and other collaborators, and for us to think about, are we monetizing hard enough the right way? Do we realize the value of some of these assets? So I think if anything, it's probably just given us a better story to be able to share, and, just more confidence in the approach that we were taking with how we sort of monetize some of the assets that we have.
I'll ask all of you actually for this one, just as we wrap up, some standout examples from each of you on an owned media program that you've either seen or been involved in. And I'll start with you, Julie. What for you is something that's a benchmark for other marketers and for yourself to say, this stuff works?
I'm going to give a MasterCard example, and this is because it's been validated, through the amount of awards and everything that we have been recognized for this program, but it's effectively an owned strategy. So I want to talk about it. It's a really wonderful example of how data and technology come together, and we build something that can also really impact social issues. So if you just give me a minute to explain it. But, following the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, almost 10 million refugees from occupied territories had crossed into Poland. And Poland was dealing with more refugees from any other nation. And two major cities in Poland were becoming very overcrowded with limited job opportunities and big affordability challenges through inflation, et cetera. And so, in this example, MasterCard, thought, hey, there must be a role that we can play given the data that we have and the platforms that we can curate. So we created a digital platform called Where to Settle, which is an online and mobile tool. And we used our own spend data integrated with employment data and housing availability and costs through different sort of government organizations in Poland to create an app that allows people to, through a very simple UX, identify different locations that they can live in Poland outside of these two major cities that provide affordable housing and job prospects. And then we also engaged with local residents in the areas to give like guided tours, virtual tours on the platform so people could learn more about their areas. And, we needed to ensure the app was discoverable and people would download it. So we had partnered with Morizon Grapka Group, who's one of the biggest publishers in Poland, who are also providing the data on real estate and job availability just to make people aware of the platform. But I think the results really, you know, spoke for themselves. You know, there was 1.5 million refugees who left Ukraine for Poland, and over 20% of them used that platform Where to Settle. And that's now created an owned asset for us that had a use case specific to the war there. But now we are working through a lot more use cases all across the world.
Well, you can see you could apply it in all manner of scenarios, and that's own the whole lot, right? That's built from scratch by MasterCard.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a great example. And Jonathan, what stands out for you? That one clearly not just, as we said, just for the Polish case, but you can see how that can be applied to a whole bunch of things. What for you is a standout owned media program?
Yeah, so the one I'm going to reference is a global online banking app called Revolut, which you may not have heard of, but actually has 30 million users globally. Wow. And this year, 2024, it launched its first advertising offering actually this month in select markets around Europe and is ultimately going to roll out globally. But why it's interesting is because they're taking the retail media network model that we've seen in grocery and liquor in Australia and amongst retail aggregators and putting that into a finance app. So they're selling banners, media headers on a carousel, search listings, and all these kind of placements around their shops section of their app. So it's an elusive audience. And as Julie says, it's getting harder and harder to reach certain demographics, especially the younger groups in paid media. And everyone goes to their finance app on a regular basis to see what's going on in their finances. So it's a real tip of the iceberg in terms of what is potentially a huge opportunity within the finance community.
So, Jonathan, just on that, is that then they selling ads per se in a paid media model, or is it a partnership valuation sort of negotiation sort of context?
No, it's selling for cash money.
Selling, is it right? So it's actually a brand becoming media then in a real context, rather than just sort of, you know, monetizing it. Interesting. They've just started, so we don't have no data on that of how it's going.
Correct.
Angus, you'll stand out.
So I think in the finance category, bringing it back to Australia, I think CBA is actually doing some really, really interesting stuff in this area. They're certainly looking at owned media in a very strategic manner. And by that, what I mean is that they are looking at owned media first, oftentimes. So they're finding ways to leverage their owned media before going out to market in a paid media sense. And I think we've all kind of touched and alluded to this throughout the podcast, but you know, there is a fundamental shift in the way that businesses can now play in that whole paid, owned and earned media space. And, you know, Julie at the start of this was mentioning some of the, was it 700 million ad blockers, I think, Julie? And the enormous number of messages that people are receiving. Paid media is a tough place to get attention now. And it used to be pretty straightforward. You used to have a funnel, and you used to feed it through your paid media and bring people on a journey from awareness through to purchase and advocacy and that kind of thing. But as we know, it's a lot more fragmented now and people have more choice, more control, they're less attentive. So by actually shifting the focus from paid media into owned media and taking that inside-out approach, it means that you can create better content, better experiences by understanding your customers and serving them the best messages at the right time. And then with these experiences, you can allow customers to share those experiences. And so more people get to see it through your earned media. And then paid media is used to effectively top up the audience and draw audiences to your brand. And I think CBA is doing this really well. And I think actually Priceless for MasterCard is one of the earliest and still one of the best examples of exactly this. It's just ironic that it started through an ad campaign. But it's that idea of being able to start with owned media and then looking at earned and paid after that.
And so what's next for each of you in a quick takeout of where your eyes or what horizon your eyes are on? Julie, to you first. Where is the next 12 months to 2 years, I guess, in your focus?
Yeah, I mean, as it relates to owned media, I think it's just, you know, we'll continue to kind of double down on how we make our assets as relevant and valuable to our partners as possible, whether that be the example of like taking Where to Settle and looking at, you know, how we make that work for different use cases. You know, continuing to really scale Priceless is, you know, continues to be very important for us. So I think, you know, we'll probably just continue to focus more and more of our investment and time on owned assets and, you know, probably continue to work with Sonder to think about, you know, where is there opportunities that maybe we're not taking the most advantage of now. We've got, you know, a first kind of view of that, but like how we actually bring that to bear might require us to work, you know, also bring our agency partners in and really think through, you know, how we leverage it further. So I think it's more of the same, but just probably, you know, continuing more focus on owned.
Just on that, Julie, how many people or experiences or cardholders are you doing in Australia or in the region on an annual basis? And is it growing?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the exact number on a monthly or an annual basis, but, you know, generally we're looking at, if I take India, for example, because that's top of mind, you know, we'll have, you know, over 120 experiences in the next 2 months. And we've only just launched that last September. So we, you know, we want to make sure that we've got enough experiences that are relevant to many folks in Australia. You know, it's probably somewhere in the 30s or 40s, but it changes often around different assets that we're leveraging at the time. For example, when the tennis is on, we'll do a lot of stuff, you know, with chefs and partners in Melbourne around the tennis. And so, you know, we'll be most scaled at that point.
Just in terms of scale for MasterCard across Asia Pacific, Julie, how big is your owned media assets in terms of your customer interactions, impressions, however you define it? What is the scale here? I think it's quite significant.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was something that definitely helped with the valuation from Sonder to understand. But, you know, in the range of about 140 million, you know, customer impacts per month across the region.
Jonathan, so in terms of what's next for you, the next 12 months, 18 months, what you see coming through in the owned media sector, where are your eyes?
I think it's really exciting what's happening in the financial sector. I think the tip of the iceberg, I've said a few times, you know, the fact that the financial institutions are embracing and observing what's happening in retail media, and applying similar levels of sophistication and capabilities in-house, ramping up the resource, ramping up the tech stack. They have the data already, so they're already way ahead of a lot of other businesses. So I think it's a really exciting time for the financial sector, and I think there's lots of opportunities in all kinds of different institutions, credit cards, banks, and others.
We're about to wrap this up, but before I let you go, to all of you, just the key takeouts and watchouts. Julie, any thoughts in terms of your peers and what's going on in the owned media sector more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, it's not a set and forget. You know, you have to ensure every day that your content is, you know, is compelling and relevant and changing, because, you know, one bad experience or one irrelevant experience, you can lose that consumer immediately. Like either there's, you know, they've seen something and they've started engaging with it, and then you become absent again. So I think the other point would be obviously just, you know, using it through all of your touch points. So whatever you're marketing through your own channels, making it consistent across all of the own channels. And the one that's probably the most crucial for me, I think, is really where you're showing up, because consumers don't have time to go looking through your site for this content. And I still find it all the time that the things that I'm looking for are often hidden. Mm-hmm. So just be where the consumer is going to be engaging and interacting is the best way to leverage your own owned asset.
Understanding their genuine experience needs, right? Jonathan, final thoughts?
Watch outs? I just wanted to build on some of Judy's points there. We always talk about the triple win when it comes to owned media leverage. And at the forefront of that triangle is the customer. If it doesn't work for the customer, it's not going to work for yourselves and your brand partners. So ensuring that triple win between those three parties involved in owned media leverage is really critical.
Julie Nestor, Jonathan Hopkins, Angus Fraser, thanks for joining. Look forward to what happens in the next 12 months in the fast-moving financial services sector. It sounds like it's really starting to take off. Thanks for joining, and look forward to some updates on Priceless and beyond, Julie Nestor.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This MI3 Audio Edition was presented by Paul McIntyre. That's moi. Producer Nick Slater. Music by Matt Dwyer. For more episodes, go to listener.com or download the Listener app and search MI3 Audio Edition to listen for free. Listener.